KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. How do you get clean water to impoverished children in China, Ethiopia, Nepal, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand? Well, that is the mission of Seattle-based Splash. And joining me is Eric Stowe, founder and director of Splash. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, awesome.
We first got a chance to talk at Seattle Interactive, the conference, and the panel was called Game Changers for the World or something. We were talking about your work, and I just was intrigued by it. I wanted to find out more. How did you get involved in this issue?
Sure. I worked in international adoption for quite some time. And in my work, they primarily focused me on relief. So what would we be doing for those children who were not being adopted? You know, for every child who does unite with a family and comes home, there's another dozen, hundred, maybe even more, who actually live out their days in institutions. So my primary focus while working in that field was, what can we do for those kids, both in the immediate term and something that was sustainable, right? A lot of times adoption agencies will give out formula or diapers or rice. And those things are decent, but they're not things that actually change the lives of those children. So in doing basically audits, doing surveys of these sites, working with caregivers, working with orphanage staff, really boiled it down to two things. One was better training for the caregivers, and the other was clean water. Hmm. I have no clue how to do the former, but the latter, I mean, if you look across anywhere you would travel, international, multinational food chains and hotels have figured out how to clean the water. Mm-hmm. Why can't we?
And bad water, of course, causes dysentery, causes numerous deaths all around the world, particularly in developing nations.
Sure.
But deciding that's where you want to work and starting your own organization, that's two different things. Why didn't you find an organization that was already doing that and attach yourself to it?
We work in this weird vacuum right now where the larger water sector, and you can loosely define that as those groups that are trying to end or alleviate water poverty globally, most of them work within a particular paradigm, right? The normal archetype that you would think of is a young girl in sub-Saharan Africa standing at the edge of a fetid pond with a 40-pound jerry can on her back that she has to walk 3 kilometers each way to fill, and a cow defecating in the background. And that archetype is justified. It's really hard work to target those populations, and it's almost a violent image. The water sector is so much bigger than that. So we are thinking of where the rural to urban migratory trends, where is the future of water going? And for us, it's urban. Mm-hmm. It really is that sect. So our target then became institutionalized kids and orphanages, street shelters, feeding centers, pediatric hospitals and schools. No one's doing that work. So it wasn't an option to just find an existing organization and support them and help them grow. There was no one really focused on that work. There's such a massive problem and so few organizations working on it that most have dedicated their resources to rural.
Sure. You must have an entrepreneurial spirit to be able to start an organization like this and ramp it up over. I understand you ran it for 3 years just by yourself.
Yeah. The first year I was working full-time in international adoption, so that meant traveling, 6 to 12 weeks a year. And then on top of that, at nights, I was doing this full-time, 6 to 12 weeks a year with a one-year-old at home and taking no pay for this. I fully repressed that first year.
So what was your first success? When did you say to yourself, hey, I can do this. I can get water to kids in impoverished areas whatever they are, at schools, et cetera.
Sure. And the cutting my teeth or the stomping ground early on was working in international adoption. So I saw that you could do it at scale. You could do it across an entire city and you could do it effectively. And that's when I realized that it shouldn't just be orphanages, that you're talking about a lot of kids who are living on the margins in these urban centers, and restricting it to just orphanages is kind of myopic, when in fact you can have a larger resonance in that single community.
Well, even how do you get it just to children? I would think if there's clean water, then everybody's going to want to get it.
That's a great byproduct. We love having secondary beneficiaries, but our target is exclusively institutionalized or marginalized kids. Mm-hmm. So that's our number one focus. We treat it. I mean, we really do have a laser-like focus on it.
Yeah.
There are some instances where we actually serve more adults than kids, but we honestly just don't even talk about that. Our focus is on kids.
Now, you're operating in Ethiopia and Nepal, and people are kind of nodding their heads. And you also operate in China. And you've mentioned that people kind of go, wait a minute, why are we doing that in China? China is a rapidly developing country.
Sure. And those are folks who have been to Shanghai and Beijing and maybe Chongqing. Mm-hmm. I've now worked in 25 of the 31 provinces, and I can assure you that that country has a long way to go. So basically, the China program, we went into an agreement with the Chinese government back in 2008. And it's a hell of an agreement, basically to work in every orphanage in the country, all 31 provinces and municipalities, over 650 orphanages. And we're 6 months away from completing that goal. So by quarter two of next year, we'll be able to announce that every orphanage in China has clean and safe water. Now, the Chinese government, on their part, they're actually doing some really incredible work around the kind of orphanage ecosystem or matrix nationwide. They are basically tearing down some of the older underperforming orphanages, building up new ones, building out whole pediatric care wings, rehabilitative centers for physically disabled kids. They're doing a lot of incredible work. They miss the water. So we went into partnership with them because we know what we're doing on that front. We're about a year ahead of schedule, so we're really excited.
That's great. Eric Stowe is my guest. He's the founder and director of Splash, and they focus on getting clean water to kids in cities in institutional situations. Just give us an example of how it works. An orphanage where you have gotten clean water. What happened? How did it proceed? How did it succeed?
Sure. I'll give the very first instance. Kathmandu, Nepal, 2004. I worked with a group in the center of the city. It was the largest single privately run orphanage in the country called Children's Home. And prior to the intervention, clean waters and real basic levels of hygiene education, they were dealing with up to 10, 11, 12 bouts of dysentery a year. Immediately in the year preceding that, they actually went down to one. So, and that was seasonal. So issues of, diarrheal illnesses actually spreading out in these institutions, just the single and simple intervention of clean and safe water for drinking, for food preparation, and for cleaning hands had a huge impact.
What's the technology and how do you make sure that it keeps working?
We stole what McDonald's does, right? You can go anywhere in the world and you are always assured that you have safe water in a McDonald's. It's their number one profit-generating item in the entire store. They can never fail at water. So we basically have duplicated what they've done, same service mentality, provisions, water filtration equipment, the water quality testing, the distribution chains, the supply chains, all of that. We've basically piggybacked off the hard work of these multinational food corporations and said we can put this towards a different population. Rather than a paying customer in a McDonald's, why not a child at a pediatric hospital? Or instead of a Starbucks, why not a school?
Have those companies helped?
Not yet. Not yet.
I was looking at your website.
The smile, but not yet.
Not yet. Maybe sometime.
Yes.
I was looking at your budget, at your website, $1.6 million, about 25% for fundraising and management. And I thought, boy, that's not a lot of money. And you're describing all the orphanages you've done just in China and elsewhere. How do you get so much out of so little?
We've got a really lean staff. So we have 11 here in headquarters. And dependent upon the workload, any time of year, we can have between 10 and 40 internationally. We cut it pretty close. But again, because those supply chains, for the most part, are already built, because that technology is already known, because there's no shortage of underemployed and overly skilled folks that we can actually tap into, and because a lot of our work is really concentrated in close proximity, it's actually a lot cheaper, a lot more effective.
How have you been greeted in areas in Kathmandu or in Ethiopia when you arrive? I assume there are a lot of aid workers, or there may be a lot of aid workers in some of these areas. Was there any suspicion you had to overcome?
Not really. I mean, we've been really allergic and averse since our inception that we didn't want to have a bunch of expats flying overseas to do this work. So we are only hiring local staff, building out those organizations with the very real intent and end goal of having those entrepreneurs actually take this on past us. So we're actively planning our exit in Nepal right now with our single goal as every school in Kathmandu. But our ultimate goal for this secondary organization that we're building out, entirely Nepali run, their own board, their own governance structures, their own bylaws, is for them to take this nationwide. Now, we can't determine if they do it, but that's what we're trying. That's what we're striving for.
And I think I heard you say that's your goal in every country. You'd like to put Splash out of business.
Which sucks because I'd really like to retire in this job. But I'd like to know that we are either sunsetted or sunsetting by 2030.
Yeah. Well, what sustains it? I mean, you have to get the equipment in place. And you have to get it set up. Then you have to make sure it works. Then you have to like replace parts when they need to be replaced. And you're setting up organizations where presumably people are not volunteering. They're also getting paid. How does it sustain itself?
The business side, I mean, I think the return is pretty self-explanatory once these institutions actually implement it. But our theory of change and proof of concept is really that waters are right. I mean, our former name was a child's right. These water systems, the government should be funding them. And local businesses should actually be doing this work. It shouldn't be us. But until in fact we've kind of integrated that larger mentality, we're fine being that early stage implementer.
So absolutely
the government should be funding this.
That's the exit strategy then? And in places where you can see yourself sunsetting your projects, the government stepping in going, oh, we'll take this over and we'll do it?
Absolutely. And you mentioned Nepal earlier, and that's a country where they've made, I mean, real promulgations, real legal documents that say every child should have clean water in schools. They just haven't been able to figure out how, in fact, that's most cost effective and how you can do that for the long term. We have that solution.
Realistically speaking, you'd like to sort of finish and have these projects self-sustaining. Do you really think you can do that in China and Ethiopia and Vietnam, Cambodia and Thailand, the other countries you're operating in?
Yes. And we'll be up to 16 countries by 2018. And as I said, the firm desire to be in zero by 2030. We will not exit a country unless we succeed, but we also don't want to be in those countries in perpetuity, mm-hmm. Distorting economies and creating this sense of dependence on NGOs.
Yeah.
Our goal is to act as that initial proof of concept to say this is totally appropriate. You are using these same types of technology, same types of distribution, same types of service specialists two blocks down the street at a fast food chain. Why not in the same environment in a school? So it's actually not a big mental leap nor a significant technological investment.
Has it always worked or are there any kind of failures along the road to get where you are?
We've had several failures and they're
where did it go wrong?
Assuming that we could put the highest end technology in and in fact that would just it would be easy to use and adopt. What we found is we really need high volume, high quality water with really low end maintenance that equals higher adoption rates over time. But the first year we've actually replaced every system we put in our first year because we overthought it. We tried for something incredibly complex when in fact the solution didn't need that, didn't call on that.
Do the people selling you the water cleaning systems that you install, are they giving you, are they the government's buying them or like where's the, how much do they cost and where does that
sure.
come from?
Sure. The systems themselves are the exact same. So the manufacturer we use is actually out of Chicago, but they have a manufacturing base in China, in Suzhou. And they give us a 65% price break. I mean, it's a huge discount. It's why we can keep a lot of our project costs really low. And those same systems that we've helped them optimize over the last 3 years are the exact same systems that every McDonald's in China uses, every McDonald's in India. So the costs are dependent upon the country, dependent upon the type of project, whether it's a school or an orphanage, whether it's China or Nepal, can range anywhere from $3,500 to about $7,000 for 10 years of use. So we front load every system with parts, supplies, peripherals, water quality tests, maintenance service, because the biggest failure in the larger water sector has been this lack of foresight, right? You put in a well, then you walk away. Something simple breaks, and because of that break in the supply chain, the entire project fails. So we give 10 years of spare parts provisions, et cetera, right up front.
Eric Stowe, the founder and director of Splash, is my guest. We're at 206-543-5869. If you've got a question, 206-543-KUOW. It's toll-free, 800-289-5869. You can write to us, conversation@KUOW.org. So what's the long-term plan? If you're successful in getting these systems up and running in the countries you're currently operating in, will you move into other countries?
No, we've got a ceiling at 16. We believe we've targeted those countries that will have that currently do and will have the greatest issues on urban water quality, and then that affecting institutionalized kids. So really, when you look at rural to urban migratory trends, high density cities, really crappy water and kids living on the margins, it really is Asia.
Yeah.
So sub-Saharan Africa, we have a very small footprint, Kenya, Uganda, and Ethiopia, but our projects are really focused on those countries between India and the Philippines.
Has doing this work with these kids in these urban settings and in these institutions kind of given you some idea of the next phase of somewhere else you can take this knowledge to do your next project?
No, because again, I think that we are capping at 16 and we want others to steal our model. I mean, our model is based on theft. We really believe that others are going to steal this, leapfrog past us, and blow us away. And it's completely appropriate in other countries. But we also think if we start taking on too many countries, there's a ton of mission creep and we get distracted. So these are our 16. If others want to steal, we will absolutely show them how to best do it. And we hope they kick our ass.
But then you're out of work. I mean, does this give you inspiration for a next phase for what the next thing that you'd like to do? Do you think it would be in this area of helping?
That's 2030 is when I'd like to be out of work. But I don't know, honestly.
Yeah,
I'm focused on solely right now how we scale this up most appropriately and effectively, and that's really where my mind is.
How do you find people in the countries to kind of hire to get to work for what you're doing?
It's a great question. So as I said earlier, there's no shortage of underemployed, overly skilled technical folks in the cities in which we work. So finding them has actually not been a problem. Right now, we have been posting for our India director. We posted for 3 weeks and had 425 applicants, the kind of rigor that we needed for them to even get into that the final qualification was really, really high. So 425 applicants that have a ton of experience in water, in urban, in NGOs, in India, with government, et cetera. It's pretty incredible.
That's nice having that number of people to select from.
Yeah.
We've got Doug calling us from Beacon Hill today who's got a question. If you just joined us, Eric Stowe is my guest, founder and director of Splash. Doug, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you guys?
Good. Got a question?
Hey, Doug.
Yeah, hey, Andre. First of all, I just wanted to comment and say the work you're doing sounds fantastic. Also, I think that in the area that you're working in, being NGOs and providing services, typically there's a culture of bureaucracy perhaps involved, and I just wanted to comment and say that it's fantastic that you kind of had these set deadlines and you do want to sunset. That's amazing, and it's amazing work. And then my question for you, Andre, was just, is there any involvement from the public here in Seattle? Do you have interns working with you? Do you have ideas where you can help train other people so that, we can learn from what you have going on?
Yeah, good question, Doug.
I would just say come to our office, splash.org. We're right on Capitol Hill next door to Cupcake Royale and in between Boom. Noodles. We love having folks come in and kick the tires, really tell us where we're weak, where we're deficient, and helping us grow. We'd love to have you come in. Splash.org.
We're not going to have time to get Stephen on the air, who's calling from Ballard, but he wants to know, do you need any volunteers? To someone who maybe doesn't have specialized knowledge, is that person at all useful for you in your Seattle office?
We'd have to talk more. Again, one of the things we're trying to fight against is having a bunch of expats overseas kind of muddying the waters.
Yeah.
But we'd love to chat. Splash.org.
Stephen, thanks for your phone call. Sorry we weren't able to get you on the air. And thank you, Eric Stowe, for stopping by and telling us about Splash. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Ross. Happy late birthday.
David Hyde produces The Conversation with Arwin Nix. Production note from Cameron Drews and Joshua McNichols. Andy Hurst is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.